Community Conversations with Community Centres SA. Here's Kerry Ackermans.
The challenges facing not-for-profits, especially in the community sector, have never been so great. With the added pressure of cost of living increases, the housing and rental crisis and food security issues, community centres and community service providers are at the grassroots of the impact on the community, and the resultant squeeze on their resources means to ensure sustainability, not-for-profits operating models will need to change. Today, fortunate to be talking to Andrea Peterson, Managing Director of Not-for-Profit Accounting Specialists, NUFPAS as we know them, who are in their 25th year of operation serving the not-for-profit sector with financial management services. Welcome, Andrea.
Thank you very much, Kerry. Great to be here.
Andrea, your history with financial management and not-for-profit started well before that 25 years. Not that well before, because you're very young.
No, I have been around for quite a while. So, yes, I guess my first experience was working in a not-for-profit organisation after I had my son. And it was my first time working for an organisation. Prior to that, I'd been in the public sector and an accounting practice servicing lots of different types of organisations. So, while I was in there, I realised that there was a bit of a gap in the market for accountants who really specialised in the not-for-profit sector. And so, yeah, so I started Not-for-Profit Accounting Specialists, which was morphed into NUFPAS, as we call it, 25 years ago, just in my lounge room with one client. So now we're an Australia-wide accounting firm servicing organisations all over Australia and every state in Australia. And we've got just under 30 staff at the moment. We've got a CEO, wonderful CEO, David Woodcock, who manages everything for me, and I act as the board of one, overseeing everything that we do at NUFPAS.
Andrew, it's been outstanding growth and congratulations on that, but you also have very much a heart, and I know that NUFPAS is driven by very strong values. What was it that attracted you or made you think that not-for-profits need special handling when it comes to financial management?
Yeah, so I was brought up by parents who had a strong attitude of social justice, and we used to go to church every Sunday, and there was a particular church minister we had for a few years who was a big advocate for service and being of service, and that resonated really strongly with me. So I became an accountant, I guess, because I was good at maths, and that's the direction I was pointed in high school, and absolutely loved the profession. But I found it a little bit unfulfilling, I guess, a lot of the accounting that I was doing. But when I started working in the not-for-profit organisation, you know, where you were really helping other people at the cutting edge of actually, you know, servicing people. So I'm a little bit sensitive to be at that front edge, but, you know, I can do what I do to help those people who are at the cutting edge. So I'm not, you know, I'm not in a soup van handing out soup, but I'm doing the work behind the scenes to make sure that that soup van can run and, you know, those people can be fed. So I care very deeply about people, and I cared very deeply about the community and the world that we live in. And for me, the accounting firm NUFPAS is a great vehicle for making a difference in the world. And we attract like-minded people who have that same attitude, who want to make a difference and make a significant difference, but doing it with the skill set that they have. So, yeah, care is one of our values. And as I said, we care greatly about the community. We care greatly about the global community. We care about people and people's lives. And we also care very deeply about our staff, and we care very deeply about our clients.
And Andrea, it's far more than just the accounting side, isn't it? It's about the governance, because when people give money to a not-for-profit, they expect it to be administered and utilised in appropriate ethical manner in the most efficient and effective way possible. Now, it'd be great to say that always happened, but you yourself have observed situations where this hasn't been the case.
No, well, I guess over the 25 years, I've definitely seen the good, the bad and the ugly. The sector attracts really well-meaning people who do want to make life better for their constituents. Unfortunately, a lot of the people that go onto boards aren't necessarily well-educated in what that means and well-educated in what governance actually really is. So, for example, when you go onto a not-for-profit board, the main aim of your position is to do whatever is best for that organisation and make decisions that are best for the organisation. Unfortunately, most people will come in with a particular agenda or a particular reason for them being on the board, and that whole decision-making process in terms of what is best for the organisation can go by the wayside a little bit. So education of boards is really, really important. People don't necessarily know what kind of responsibilities they're taking on, particularly around liability. If an organisation, for example, becomes insolvent, they can be personally liable for debts and things like that. So, yeah, I think the regulators understand that the people that do take on those board positions are really well-meaning, and they tend to be, you know, more educative rather than punitive, which is great. But we just see the huge need in the sector for education and for educated people to get involved.
And it's interesting, isn't it, Andrea, because people go on a board, you said, with all good intentions, and quite often they're either lived experience themselves or they're an advocate for somebody with lived experience, which sounds amazing. However, there is so much more, as we know, to running a not-for-profit organisation. And particularly that can be an issue sometimes when somebody who's had an incident and they start up an organisation, I believe it's called founder syndrome.
Yes, and I'm a founder myself. So you do have to get out of the way sometimes of the growth of the organisation. And I've certainly had to do that at NFPAS. Like, I've had an aim always to be on a journey of personal growth and development and to see how far my business could go. And it got to a point where it needed a professional CEO to actually then take it on, which allowed me to then continue my growth by being a board member of one. And, you know, operate less operationally and more strategically and operate just by KPIs and not by being in the office all the time. So I have lived the founder experience. And I've also seen the founder syndrome where potentially the founder does get in the way of the growth of the organisation. And that's not to denigrate the wonderful things that founders do by starting up their own charities, but it's just understanding where your own limits are and ensuring that, again, what's best for the organisation is, the decision-making is based on what's best for the organisation.
And of course, there's so much need out there, isn't there? I mean, honestly, who do people support? It's just absolutely massive. And now with online, everyone's using social media in order to try and attract donors. So the competition for money and for time and for volunteers is huge, isn't it?
Oh my goodness, it really is. It's quite a crowded sector. We get a lot of inquiries for people wanting to start up their own charity, which is fantastic. Like, it just shows the entrepreneurial spirit that's out there. And I wouldn't want to stop anyone that wanted to start up a charity. It's just making sure that they're very aware of what other things they could be doing to make even more of an impact. There might already be a charity that they could then just raise funds for or volunteer. They could set up a fund just in the name of their own, you know, let's say, for example, someone passed away from a particular health issue and they wanted to raise funds so that no one else has to go through that grief. They don't necessarily have to start up a charity to do that. They could fundraise for another organisation that's got the same aim, for example. So usually when we get a startup inquiry like that, we counsel the people to make sure that they really know what they're getting into. It's not an easy thing running a charity. It's not an easy thing raising money. Just because you start a charity does not mean that your money is just going to pour into your coffers. It's not a case of build it and they will come. It's hard work raising money in an already competitive field. We also have the issue of competitive tenders, and the whole competition thing impacts on sustainability. You know, you're competing with other like-minded people raising money for a similar cause.
So let's have a look at that. Let's take food. Now, we all know there's a food security crisis at the moment. More people are asking for food than they ever had before. Even people with jobs aren't managing with the cost of living increases. So someone decides, well, I'm going to start doing meals. I might start from my home. I'll get all the neighbours involved. Oh, why don't I register this as a charity? And this is where it starts, because when you start up an organisation, it's not just a matter of making the food. You'll have food safety. You'll have risk. You'll have insurance. You'll have all the compliance that volunteers will need to undertake. There's the ethical issues of that if you do need to charge a small amount, you'll need to set up a bank account. Does that come under an ABN? So you can see, just from wanting to provide meals for the community, it's not easy. And the replication that we have of the same type of service delivery is huge.
Yeah, that's right. As soon as you start doing something like that, I mean, it's one thing to kind of have a bit of a sausage sizzle, to raise some money to help a particular cause. But the bigger you get, the more complex it gets. And charities and not-for-profits are very accountable. There are numerous regulators, endless amounts of legislation. The regulatory framework is very complex. You've got to manage risk. And as soon as you employ one person you have legislation, policies, people management, you know, industrial relations, work health and safety. As soon as you employ one person, the complexity of running that organisation just increases a huge amount.
And you can't even get around it by saying, oh, but everyone's a volunteer, because volunteers now, much to their dismay, need to follow the rules. And often you'll get, oh, look, I come here to offer my time. I shouldn't have to, as we came in today, make sure the studio's clean. I'm a volunteer here at Coast FM. But it's not so. You do need to follow rules, because often there's legislation and compliance around those rules not being followed, the way that people interact in the workplace with inclusive practice. Now, if people aren't aware of that as a volunteer, then they may speak inappropriately, and then you've got another whole range of issues on your hand. Litigation risks, HR risks.
Absolutely. And, you know, work, health and safety covers volunteers as much as anybody else. And, you know, running volunteers, as you would well know, is like, a bit like herding cats. It's not easy.
Volunteers are incredible and we all need them. So there is an art to managing volunteers, in fact, to managing all the aspects of a not-for-profit. It's not easy, and often, as you said, people find themselves with boards, that great heart, but they don't have the expertise. Neither should they be expected to. But there are free resources. You don't need to go and do the AICD course. ACNC now have a free course online.
That's right, and the Institute of Community Directors also has free courses. So there is education available out there, and there are plenty of great, you know, consultants who run training sessions for boards, which can be tailored to your own board as well. But, you know, we highly advocate getting your board trained. As soon as you get a new board member on, there should be an induction, there should be training, especially if they haven't had any governance training in the past. They really need to know what they're getting into and what their obligations are. Yeah, as we've said before, like, very well-meaning people, they might have lived experience. They're going onto that board because they have a particular passion about the issue, which is fantastic. That's very motivating. But you also need legal, marketing, accounting, HR skills on that board as well. You know, it's that skill matrix that you need.
Boards are responsible for the strategic direction of the organisation, and that's where the complexity can come in, because if you don't have that understanding and mix of legal, finance, marketing, and marketing's very important these days, then that means you have a missing piece in that strategy, and often people then fall to operational.
Yeah, that's right. People concentrate on what they know. So as an accountant, I'll be most interested in the finances, you know, but if someone hasn't got any experience in finances, but they run their own home budget, then they might be looking line by line at things like stationery and how much the organisation is paying for power, rather than looking at it in terms of, well, what is actually required to meet your strategic objectives.
And if we compare Australian not-for-profit boards to, say, those in the US you are expected to bring in money and contacts, and we're talking serious money. There's an expectation to fundraise, but for most board members, they'd be horrified to think that they had to fundraise or to bring in contacts.
Yeah, well, they're giving their time, so that's a fairly big commitment already. I'm actually quite glad that we don't have that US system here, because there are experts at raising money. I mean, Kerry, you're one of the people that I know who's excellent at it, you know, coming up with out-of-the-box ideas to, you know, change up income streams and generate more money, that kind of way. And that's a skill set in itself, and you don't necessarily need that from a board member. Having it would be great, but it's, you know, there's a lot of other skills that board members can bring that will add value to the board.
And one of those, of course, is the understanding on how to make decisions, because often when people like myself, and thank you, do bring these creative out-of-the-box ideas, you have to have a board who can work through the risks and whether they'll take that project on board.
Yeah, so we do talk about brave decisions. You've got a particular saying about brave decisions.
You need to make brave but sound decisions.
Yes, brave but sound decisions, and I think that's the key, really, because boards generally will be risk averse, which is fine, but it's that balance between entrepreneurial and risk aversion, when at the end of the day you really need to look at what's best for the organisation. And I have seen some last ditch efforts put in where, you know, an organisation may only have, like, you know, 6 months funding left or a year funding left, and they just put it all into a particular strategy to try and get that income stream operating so that they can continue, you know, with mixed success. But sometimes that's what you need to do. It's either, okay, we'll just continue on for 6 months and wind down, or we'll try and raise some more money and keep going.
I'm talking to Andrea Peterson, Managing Director of Not-for-Profit Accounting Specialists, NUFPAS as we call them, about not-for-profits and sustainability. Andrea, one of the other issues is doing nothing, and particularly in an area of when a not-for-profit has managed to build up some money in their coffers. JobKeeper did help, some of the money given out over COVID. They've got some money there. Well, now it isn't good enough just to sit it in a bank account at nearly zero interest, is it?
No. And unfortunately, that is a decision that some boards will make. And obviously, that's the least risky. So, I understand why they do that. But hopefully, you know, you've got some commercially minded people on your board or some slightly entrepreneurial people on your board. And that diversity of skill sets and attitudes is really important. You'll have your really entrepreneurial people who will kind of push the envelope. And then you've got the risk averse people, which, you know, tends to be us accountants who, you know, put a bit of reality into the situation. But that blend, you know, is the best one to actually potentially push you past what you would normally do. I guess any investment, whether it's, you know, in a bank account or term deposit, or into, you know, a social enterprise, or investing in a particular program development, you've always got to weigh up the risk and the potential benefit of it. And not everything's going to come out the best, but all you can do is, you know, base your decisions on the best information that you have and the risk profile that you have.
And do you think also not-for-profits need to be looking at the opportunity cost of not doing anything?
Yes, that is that's a really good one. Because obviously, if you put it in the bank account and earn no money compared to putting in a term deposit, you know, the opportunity cost is the interest on the term deposit. And similarly, if you put the money into something a bit more entrepreneurial, the opportunity cost could be even higher if you just keep that money in the bank account. So it's a great way to look at things. Cost-benefit analysis, opportunity cost, those kind of things.
And it's great to get the money in through funding, but that is diminishing and is a more competitive pie than it used to be. So not-for-profits will need to start looking more internally at how they're structured and how they run, because, and especially for board members, is you've got that due diligence that a for-profit board has, but also the responsibility to meet the mission. So, Andrea, what are the top challenges you've seen not-for-profits facing?
There are a few. Governance is definitely one of them. And as I said, as I mentioned before, the board's understanding that their role is to make decisions that are best for the organisation, not for themselves or not for their particular agenda or what they're trying to achieve. So that's a really, really big one. Unqualified boards, as we've mentioned, you know, they're not educated necessarily and don't necessarily have the skills actually required. Sometimes they might be taking up a seat that someone else would be better off holding. Not that it's easy to get people on boards these days.
Anyway. I was just thinking that often it is somebody who is prepared to put their hand up rather than the person who's the right one for the job.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. Finite resources is the big one, really, and this is where your expertise comes in, Kerry, because you're great at coming up with more money. Most not-for-profits you talk to will always say they don't have enough funds. They've pretty much got an infinite demand for their services. They need to live within their means, but it's that insistent demand that means that they feel like they need to be doing more, and so they're always on the lookout for more.
And would you say they often over deliver because the passion and heart is there outside of the budget that's funded for the program?
Yeah, there is a tendency. I mean, what you don't want is burnout from your staff. I mean, as we know, people working for charities and not-for-profits aren't paid particularly well. And then on top of that, there's an expectation of volunteer time, putting more effort in because it is for a good cause, but then you get burnout. So it's really important to balance that out for your people. And managing people is probably one of the top three issues as well, like having the right people in the right jobs, making sure there's congruency in the values, having enough diversity to get the great outcomes, but without too much conflict. We've certainly learnt over the years at NIFPAS that if you think about people in terms of concentric circles, if you think about yourself being in one circle and the people that are a little bit different to you and another outer circle, and the people that are more different from you than an outer circle and then the people a lot different from you in an outer circle like that, you don't want everyone to be like you, but you don't want this really, really huge differences because that adds conflict. So you want some people that are just slightly or a little bit different to you that add diversity, but you can still get on with a job.
Because that culture is really important in an organisation.
Yeah, it's really essential, and I've certainly had a lot of lessons on that on the way through, you know, and understanding too that if you get too much congruence, people who really are good for your organisation and who wouldn't normally be outliers become outliers. So you need enough diversity that you're keeping all the good people that you need, because people who become outliers end up leaving because they don't feel comfortable where they are, and you don't want good people leaving. So it's just getting that balance right between congruency and not enough congruency. And then probably one that's close to my heart is really managing budgets and living within your means. Not-for-profits are constantly being asked to do more with less. Competitive tendering, you know, short-term contracts mean that not-for-profits are always looking for cost savings with the pretty much unlimited demand for their services and, you know, high expectations of governments, funders, society in general means that not-for-profits run off the smell of an oily rag. I mean, that's an expression for a reason. They really do. And they have to become more and more efficient. And it takes money and effort, resources to become efficient because you've got to invest time and effort into that. So it's really important that, you know, you get your app stack right, you know, technology plays a big part in those efficiency gains, you know, systemization plays a big part. And with the introduction of AI, we're going to see massive changes in everything, including the way that not-for-profits will be run. And there's a lot of different ways that not-for-profits can kind of look for efficiencies and do things differently. But AI will be a big one for the future.
And Andrea, interesting that we're discussing this because we have been writing a book for a number of years on how to future-proof your not-for-profit. We started it before COVID, so then when COVID came, we had to address that. Now, of course, we have AI, but it's hopefully going to be launched early in the new year. And we spoke to over 100 CEOs across the nation about their challenges. We found lots of commonalities.
We did. And I think I had said, to use the expression before we started the book, that there are no new problems, there are just new solutions. And certainly, as we've talked to all the contributors to the book, who've been fantastic in just in terms of volunteering their time to help us, it became very clear that there are, I think we came up with 10 different areas, such as governance, you know, people, income streams and things like that. And so much commonality across the sector.
We could have written a book on boards.
Oh my goodness, we could have written a book on each area, absolutely. And there's many more podcasts in our future, I think, deep diving into some of these issues. But the interesting thing about the book is we have come up with a model that we think is the future for not-for-profits and will answer most, if not all, of the issues that we actually raise in the book. So we are still developing that model, as you know, and fine-tuning it. But I think that will be one of the biggest contributions that we'll make in this book. Highlighting all the issues and some things that we would suggest that people do is going to be great. But I think this model is the future.
And it'll be something, Andrew, I'm sure that you will agree after many of our discussions. We don't want to have not-for-profits going there kicking and screaming. We want them to go there because they've planned and they're being preventive.
That's right. You know, at the end of the day, I keep saying this, that you know, board members need to be making decisions that are in the best interests of their organisation. And that's not always going to be popular. And it's not always going to be in the best interest of the board member. It's not always going to be in the best interest of the staff.
Or the CEO.
Even the CEO. But their obligation is to make the decision that is best for the organisation regardless.
It's all about the greater good because all not-for-profits have fantastic causes. But they've got to be sustainable. They really do need to change their operating model. So presumably when the book is launched, then the answers will be in there.
Yes, stay tuned.
How do we find out more about not-for-profit accounting specialist, Andrea?
The best place to look for us is on our website, which is www.nfpas.com.au. Information all about our services and who we are and what we stand for and about our staff. And if people can look at the website to find out more.
And if you just put in NFPAS, they'll come up there. Very highly found, as I said, the organisation is Australia-wide, so they're in a great position to be able to provide that advice and information that is benchmark because you're seeing it and you've seen it for 25 years.
Yes, we are Australia's leading not-for-profit accounting specialist. We've been around the longest. And I just wanted to mention our vision, which really, I think, sets us apart from other accounting firms. And our vision is for world peace. And world peace is really the absence of war, the absence of disease, the elimination of poverty, access to education for all, and fulfillment where people can undertake activities that actually feed their soul. There's a beautiful poem that I found one day that I haven't never been able to find since, but it goes something like, my great-grandfather fought in the war, so my grandfather could be a farmer, so my dad could go to university, so I could sit under a tree and write poetry. And to me, that is the essence of world peace. And it's really what we're here for. We're here to make a difference, make a significant difference in the world and make the world a beautiful place to be in.
Oh, they're beautiful values. Thank you very much for joining us today on the podcast. Andrea Peterson, Managing Director of NFPAS.
Thanks, Kerry.
And thank you for listening and engaging with our community conversations today. Every week, we aim to bring you stories from far and wide across South Australia and beyond. People who are game changers in our community, doing great work, plus general topics of community interest. If you have any subjects you think we should cover or any other feedback, please let us know at communitycentressa.asn.au and feel free to share this podcast so we can engage more people in our next community conversation.
Community Conversations. For more information, check out communitycentressa.asn.au.